The Committee on Commerce and Consumer Protection will come to order. This is an informational hearing. This is Tuesday, April 22nd, 2008. We've been asked to hear about a couple provisions in our omnibus liquor bill. Senator Scogin is carrying that for the committee, as you may recall, and the House to date has included a couple of provisions. I want to make it clear that the House has not passed this bill yet in the full body, but I think it came out of their Ways and Means, or their Rules Committee. Their Rules Committee in this form. So members have the unofficial engrossment. You'll just see it's as it came out of the Rules Committee in the House, and it's going to the floor. It may or may not pass in this form, but there are a couple provisions that I think we would like the committee to at least know about before Senator Scogin goes to the conference committee. I think it would be helpful to him and then helpful to the rest of us should he come back from the conference committee with these pieces. And but just understand that this has not officially passed the House yet. It has our bill did pass off the Senate floor. And I think I will draw your attention to the fact that there was a provision in the Senate bill from Senator Tomassoni having to do with a license up in Cherry Township or something.
That's correct.
And that's not in the House bill. And Senator Scogin's been in communication with Senator Tomassoni about that. That may or may not be in the conference committee. But what we have then is Senate File 3672, not really officially before us, but that's what we're discussing. And one of the provisions, in fact, I might ask Senator Latz if he'd like to come on up to the witness table and bring your fellows with you. Want to talk about the pedal pub. I think almost everybody in here had a chance to – well, everybody had a chance. I don't know if everybody took the opportunity to go out and see it. And you all have a brochure in full color here of what it looks like. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I have a constituent named Al Boyce who's here with me.
Excuse me.
Who has a device that is parked out in front of the Capitol right now, which would allow for pedal power to drive around wherever it wants to go, where the professional driver will steer it. He would like to be able to allow people to bring alcohol onto that device, like an open-air multi-passenger bike, without running afoul of state law or local ordinances that prohibit open bottles, except in devices such as limousines, where it is allowed now under state law, and buses, where it is allowed now by state law. So what this proposal for the change of state law would be to add an exemption to the same section of the statute that allows open bottles on buses and limousines for a device such as the pedal pup. And like Mr. Boyce is available to make a presentation to you and describe a little bit more about what the device is and does and his intents.
Senator Scogin has a question, I think.
Just some direction for the committee. Madam Chair, this would be on House language that was handed out in Section 1.
Yes,
people
it's
are
Section 1.
Follow
you might
along.
See.
That's where the language actually is located.
Right. We're not really going to go through the entire bill here, but we just are highlighting the things that the couple of the provisions of the House bill as it currently stands. Mr. Boyce, welcome to our committee.
Thank you. I believe everybody's been given a copy of my testimony, so I'm just going to read through it and then ask for questions. Thank you for considering the Pedal Pub Amendment to the 2008 Omnibus Liquor Bill. By way of introduction, the Pedal Pub is a 16-passenger, professionally driven pedal-powered vehicle. They are manufactured in the Netherlands, and Pedal Pub LLC, a Minnesota-based company, imported the first and currently the only one in the United States of March of 2007. Pedal Pub LLC also owns the distribution rights for this vehicle through the U.S., Canada, Mexico, Latin America, and the Caribbean. In the Netherlands, passengers on the 32 pedal pubs there have legally been allowed to enjoy alcohol beverages while on board for the past 10 years. We hope to offer that same privilege in professionally driven pedal pubs here in Minnesota, the same way that passengers and professionally driven limousines and buses do now. In 2007, we researched the Minnesota state law on this subject. According to state statute, Chapter 169A, 35, Subdivision 2, it reads, it is a crime for a person to drink or consume an alcoholic beverage, distilled spirit, or 3.2% malt liquor in a motor vehicle when the vehicle is upon the street or highway. Since the pedal pub is not motorized, according to an email received from Minnesota State Director of Alcohol, I should have said enforcement there, excuse me, Marlene Kelsberg, she said, our position is that this issue is not a state statute violation if alcohol is consumed aboard the pedal pub. And there is an email. The email from her is attached to this packet. However, when we asked Minneapolis Assistant Attorney Mary Ellen Hang how Minneapolis would interpret this, she said, it is my opinion that the passengers on your pedal pub, should they consume alcohol while on the device, would be in violation of Minneapolis City Ordinance Section 364.40, consuming alcohol in public. Section 364.40 prohibits the consumption of alcohol while on a public street, highway, alley, sidewalk, boulevard, or any other place frequented by the public. And Mary Ellen's email is also attached here. In a follow-up phone conversation, when asked why the limousine and bus passengers were allowed to consume alcohol in Minneapolis, Attorney Hang explained that they were exempt from the city ordinance because the overarching state law trumps the city laws and state statute and the aforementioned law, state law, which exempts passengers, those vehicles, from the city's alcohol prohibition. She suggested we pursue a change to the state law to address this issue. In April of 2007, we contacted State Representative Steve Simon from my district and explained our situation. He had the issue researched and determined the best way to address this was to introduce an amendment to Chapter 169A, 35, Subdivision Division 6 to add a new vehicle type. And his language is, a vehicle that is operated for commercial purposes in a manner similar to a bicycle, as defined in Section 169.01, Subdivision 51, with three or more passengers who provide pedal power to the drivetrain of the vehicle. As it was past the deadline for legislation last year, Representative Simon introduced it into the Minnesota House this year, and that text is also included here. In 2007, we operated the pedal pub dry. That is, that passengers we did not allow passengers to consume alcohol while on board the pedal pub. However, everyone who rode the pedal pub has ever seen or heard about the pedal pub thought that that privilege to enjoy alcohol while being chauffeured should be legal. Actually, in one of our rides, we were talking with a St. Paul policeman who asked us if we had a keg on board, and when we replied, no, sir, he replied, why the heck not? We want to make it clear we are not asking for the right to sell alcohol or even to provide it. We are asking for the right to allow passengers to bring aboard their own alcohol and serve and drink it themselves without any participation on our part or of our drivers or our employees. We have developed a waiver that we would have every passenger sign who is aboard a pedal pub ride where alcohol is to be consumed. That's attached here also. We will confirm that everyone is 21 or over. We already check ages as standard protocol on every pedal pub ride. We indicate that it was checked on our standard waiver, and that standard release of liability waiver is attached here also. Finally, we have included a testimonial email from a Minneapolis citizen, Richard Bauer, and that's attached. Last year, we requested a license from the Minneapolis City Parks to be able to operate the pedal pub within city parks, and we spoke before a park board meeting. Mr. Bauer was present at the meeting for other matters, but he had previously seen the pedal pub in operation, and following the meeting, he wrote the attached email of praise for the pedal pub to the board and our support. Again, thank you for your consideration. We're looking forward to a long and successful partnership with Minneapolis, Greater Minnesota, and the rest of the country as we develop this unique eco-friendly vehicle into an asset in Minnesota's and America's tourism industry. Thank you.
So, thank you, Mr. Boyce. I have a question about, I assume people ride this. I've seen kind of an itinerary. Do you go, for example, from one bar to another bar, and do people then go in and they may or may not have something to drink at that bar, but they can't bring the drink onto the pedal pub right now? Is that what you're?
That's correct, Madam Chair. We have several standard routes. Some of them do have bars along the way, and those are at the discretion of the renter of the vehicle where they want to stop.
So, if you were to get what you're asking for, the change in law, would you still stop at a bar? Can they sell something that's taken from the premises?
No. I shouldn't speak to that because I don't know. Our intention is for passengers to be able to bring their own alcohol on board and just serve it to themselves while on board, not to take alcohol out of bars.
So, Senator Olson, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I had several questions, just kind of a curiosity type of thing about how this works. And I was wondering kind of, first of all, in the same way that the chair brought up, I had a question about that, because it seems to me that if someone brought alcohol with them from home and then went to a bar, I don't think they'd be allowed to bring that alcohol into a bar. And then most bars, I don't think, allow you to leave. In fact, I think there's a law that it relates to that. So I don't think they can leave the bar with alcohol. So to the extent that you're going from bar to bar, I just wonder as a practical matter how that would work.
My understanding is... I'm sorry.
No, Mr. Boyce, I was just identifying you because when we listen to the tape, we need to know who's talking. So.
Certainly. Sorry about that. Thank you, Senator Wilson.
Olson.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Sorry twice. Yes, my understanding is that even in a limousine or a bus, if you should take the alcohol out of that vehicle, you would be liable for whatever local ordinance would cover that. You would be, in the case of Minneapolis, I believe that would be public consumption. So we're asking if somebody were to bring their own alcohol on board, they would have to leave it on the pedal pub. They would not be able to leave that vehicle with a drink in their hand. And the same as they would not be able to leave a bar with a drink in their hand.
Senator Olson.
Okay, Madam Chair. Well, and that just kind of raises some other questions in my mind. Like if you have the pedal pub rented out by a group and they're kind of all together, that would seem to be one use or kind of envision one scenario. Another would be, though, if this is just kind of a thing that's going from bar to bar, picking up whoever happens to come on and get off, you're probably going to have people who are on the pedal pub sharing alcohol with each other. And I don't know if that's an issue or not, but I can certainly see where this would be not only fun, but, you know, maybe keep people off the road who shouldn't be driving themselves. And it's a nice environmentally friendly thing to do. But there are these practical concerns that I'm just – do you mind if I ask a couple
of questions? No, Senator Olson, that's
Madam Chair?
Fine.
These two questions may be related. One is there a reason from a traffic standpoint, and I don't know if the Department of Transportation has weighed in on this at all or not, where we might want to license and somehow limit the number of these so that we don't have them everywhere causing an impediment to normal traffic, you know, because they do move more slowly. And so I would think that, you know, you would want to be – you would at least want to give some thought to that. And then the other question I have, maybe related to that, is have any other states, is this something that's going on in other states as well? And if so, how have they handled it as far as regulation?
Mr. Boyce.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Olson, once again. You had three issues there. First, you mentioned picking up passengers. And our understanding is if we were to pick up passengers on an ad hoc basis like that, we would become a pedicab or a taxi cab, and we don't wish to be in that business. So we wouldn't be picking up random passengers. If, for example, we are rented by a municipality in Collegeville, they rent us for a community festival, and the city itself is renting the vehicle there, we would then do whatever they asked us to do. But it would always be rented by a group. By the nature of the vehicle, if we have enough passengers get out so there's nobody left on board, we can't get it back to where we started. So far, all of our tourists have been round trip.
Practical details.
With regard to traffic, that's a very good issue, and we did talk to the Department of Transportation as well as the Minneapolis and St. Paul Police Departments regarding that. And they found no ordinances on their books regarding that except for causing congestion or obstructing traffic. And so we've been advised not to obstruct traffic. And that's the only advice we've been given on that point. And then third, you mentioned other states. No, the pedal pub is actually the only one in the country right now. So Minnesota has the only one. We are in the process of finalizing a sale to New York City. So they'll have the second one. But we beat them.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, well, congratulations, and that's kind of a cool thing that we're the first in this state to be doing this. But I guess, and that all the more reason why it's a nice thing that we have this informational hearing at this stage, because the one thing we have to keep in mind when we draft a law is that we're not drafting it necessarily just for your business or the way that your business is planning to conduct itself, but we're putting something into law that pertains to anyone that would fit within the definition of, you know, what we allow legally. And so considering that this might be a growing trend, it's a good idea to think about it in a broader way and kind of address what possible issues there might be. Like you said, for example, that you don't plan to go from place to place, so you're not worried about those issues. But I don't think there's anything that would prevent someone else from deciding to do that, except that I suppose then they'd have to meet licensure requirements as a cab or whatever. So anyway, appreciate the information.
Thank you.
Senator Scogin.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Boyce, how wide is your vehicle?
It's 2,300 pounds.
How wide?
Oh, wide, I'm sorry. It's about 8 feet.
How does that fit into our bicycle lanes?
Mr. Boyce.
Sorry.
It's okay.
I'll learn eventually. It fits within the bicycle lanes, but we try to not go in the bicycle lanes, just like we don't go down bike paths. We want to stay in the roads. We don't want to obstruct bicycles, in other words.
You probably stay off busy roads.
Exactly.
Busy roads.
Well, I'm thinking, I know, I've heard from several sources, they've seen you, the pedal pup, over in northeast Minneapolis. Several people have told me that. And I assume you're probably not pedaling down University or, you know, one of those main roads. Is that correct?
That's true. We travel down Marshall Avenue in northeast Minneapolis, and then we cut across to 4th Street. That's one of our standard routes. We have approximately 8 standard routes. And people can develop their own custom routes as well. But with our approval, they have to be fairly flat because the pedal pup doesn't take hills very well. And it has to be fairly in traffic. On Marshall, that can be very busy, of course, but we travel down very wide shoulders on Marshall Street, so we stay on the shoulder.
Okay. So, and you stay, and you don't go in city parks or anything like that? Is that right, Mr. Boyce?
We don't go on city park trails, and we haven't gone in city parks yet, pending a contract with the Park Board of Minneapolis.
Okay. Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair. Mr. Boyce, I assumed you testified in the House. Was the is there any opposition to this, or is it just concerns about 8 or 10 drunken people out in public?
Mr. Boyce.
Actually, it passed the committee unopposed, and it was a very, very busy night that night, and the chair did an informal poll of those members present and asked if anyone was planning on opposing it, and hearing none, my testimony is very brief. They were concerned, however, that one question was, would smoking be allowed in this bar? And we said, yes, it's actually a sales point, that it's the only bar left in Minnesota where they can still smoke.
It is outdoors.
It is outdoors.
Well, Madam Chair, Mr.
Yes,
Boyce may be losing some votes in this committee.
So, or gaining some, Senator
Scogin,
you never know.
Madam Chair, it would meet the definition of an outdoor area even under the Clean Indoor Air Act.
It would.
Yes.
Yes.
It does not
yes.
have any walls enclosing it.
Right.
No more jokes.
Are there any more questions from members? Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak to with this? I know some folks are here from the cities for some other issues, but. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senators Pierre Ouellette with the City of Minneapolis. We want to say on the record that the pedal pub has been operating in northeast Minneapolis for some time, which actually is my part of town, and we really haven't had any complaints or problems with it. We would like to reserve in the future our ability to permit or license these vehicles, particularly if they begin serving alcohol on them. We had some council members concerned about trash, the use of glass, and noise. And not that that would be a problem, but in fact, some operator was operating that way and not taking the kind of care that this particular operation seems to be doing, that we would like to reserve some ability for the local units of government to permit or license these vehicles.
So that makes sense. And I think if we, yes, Senator Scogin?
Madam Chair, just, I don't know. Well, yeah, I think we got to have some way to come back and just regulate, I guess. I noticed there was a rearview mirror on it. Are there other signals, lights, flashing things?
Mr. Boyce.
Safety equipment on that?
Thank you. Yes, we have lights that clamp on to both the front and the rear flasher lights. We try not to operate after dusk for the safety of everyone on board.
And Mr. Ouellette, I think that there's nothing in the language, and I don't know if you've seen it or not, there's nothing in there that would preclude the city from having some requirements setting, having an ordinance dealing with those kinds of issues, I think.
Yeah, well, thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, we'll take that and take a look at it.
I appreciate your comments. Senator Scogin.
Madam Chair, to Mr. Stang, is this a whole new animal because it's not motorized? Is this different than a limousine and a bus?
Mr. Stang.
Madam Chair, Senator Scogin, it's a little bit different in terms of the kinds of bills that this committee has looked at. As I understand the proposal, he's not asking for licensing to provide or sell alcoholic beverages, which is kind of the bread and butter of what we deal with here. He's just merely asking for an exemption from the open bottle statute, which is a criminal statute, to allow him to do this, similar to what a limousine is. So, you know, in that sense, it's something different than we've looked at before. But, you know, it certainly appears to achieve the objective as he set it out.
Okay. Is there anybody else who'd like to add their 2 cents? Okay. Mr. Boyce, thank you. Thank you so much for bringing the Pedal Pub over here so we could see it. From what I hear, it looks like people are having a lot of fun, and I've actually watched some of the video, and I assume that was from Minneapolis. Was that video that...
I believe the video, if you looked at the YouTube video, that is from Senator Latz's area, St. Louis Park, Parktacular Parade. The Hoy Guards company rented us as their float.
Okay.
And
so come to the Parktacular Parade.
That's what we're doing right now.
Please. Mr. Boyce?
A nice idea was suggested outside by one of our passersby. Suggested that the joint conference committee for the omnibus liquor bill could be held on board the Pedal Pub. We would offer that ride for free. It was suggested that maybe that had to go past the steering committee first. So.
Senator Scogin,
Mr. Boyce, there's not enough days in the year to explain that back in my. We won't be on the pedal.
Although, if you went right now, they wouldn't be able to serve any alcohol on it.
That's true.
So, okay, Mr. Boyce, thank you. Senator Latz, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Madam Chair and the others.
And so members understand that that's probably going to be in the bill that Senator Scogin will be looking at. Then the other issue that's raised by the current House bill has to do with a temporary extension of alcohol serving up till 4 a.m. We now have, Mr. Stang, can you tell us, during the week, or is it the same every day? Is it 2 a.m. every day? Current law?
Maybe Mr. Bagnoli can help me out. I think you have to have a special permit with a fee if you serve between 1 and 2, but it's at least 1 o'clock, and I'm not sure that everybody serves till 2, and it depends on the local jurisdiction as well.
Mr. Bagnoli, welcome.
Madam Chair, Joe Bagnoli, McGranche Law Firm, representing Licensed Beverage Association. I apologize. The question was, what's the current law?
What's the current law in terms of closing time?
Current law is cities have the option. It's a may. Cities may allow closing times late as 2 a.m. And it's their option.
And Mr. Bagnoli, is that every day of the week?
It can be every day of the week or less.
Right. Okay. Okay. So I thought I'd explain that I had introduced a bill to do this, and during the Republican National Convention, and we withdrew. We were going to have it here heard. We did not, because there was. It's like one of those things. You just had to sit there for a while and percolate and get people talking, and we really didn't have time at the end to deal with that, or even to get to where we are today. So there was kind of this flurry of negativity, if you will, about the subject, and then people thought, well, maybe if we modified it, didn't have it for as many days as we originally proposed, if it were restricted in terms of length of or number of days we could offer bars being open till 4, it would be just during the convention, not pre and post, as I understand it. They did adopt this in the House, and the majority leader thought it would be wise of us, of our committee, to have a look at this and for people to weigh in with any comments that they may have about it. So, Senator Scogin, did you want to say something?
The language
is going to be at the end. It's section, well, not at section quite six. At the end, section
six.
Section six. I'm sorry. So it is on the back page 4. That's yep. How the bill's currently standing in the other body.
And, Madam Senator Chair, Scogin. Just to clarify, businesses can now be open till 2. Can they serve until 2?
Mr. Bagnoli, if you come back.
Madam Chair, Joe Bagnoli, yes, they can.
Madam Chair,
the only change that made when we went from 1 to 2 was literally the number 1 becoming the number 2 in the statute.
And so, Mr. Bagnoli, they probably still do last call earlier than that because they can't. Can you be drinking the drink after 2?
Madam Chair, yes.
You can? Okay.
It's been a while. I would ask.
None of us know anymore.
Our age is showing, Mr. Becknell, and mine's much more than yours.
So. And Madam Chair, I think that there might be what the law says and how different establishments interpret the law may be a little bit. I don't know. Mr. Stang may actually know if you're allowed to be drinking after that.
Mr. Stang.
Madam Chair, I think the restriction is on sale. I think if the bar allows you to sit there with your drink, you can. Some, I assume, kind of want to hurry out shortly after 2.
Order 3 of them, 5 out of the 2.
Okay.
Right, let's go again.
So I know there are some people here that I think the committee would like to hear from. And
I could stay too.
Think I know who they are. So, Ms. Johnson, Council President Barbara Johnson from Minneapolis, City of Minneapolis, welcome.
Thank
nice
you
to
so
see
much.
You. Excuse me. Did you want to speak to, you know, what does the city feel about this? I mean, I think the only people I heard from in the first instance when I first brought up the bill was the City of St. Paul. Mm-hmm. And there were some concerns by the police there, but I think since you've had more ongoing conversations here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I think you're alluding to this being an issue that needs to percolate a little bit was an accurate one. Our city considered this concept a couple weeks actually after it was first proposed, and while it was not unanimous on our city council, there were a number of us, a majority, that felt that it was a good idea. We think that just because of the unique circumstances of the Republican convention, where the actual convention will be occurring in St. Paul and may have some later hours, and then the delegates will have to be put on buses and brought back to hotels all across the metropolitan area, that it might be a late evening for folks. And so the ability to have a drink when they get back to their hotel would be something I think that would be a plus for us as we host this convention. And, of course, this convention for us and our partners in St. Paul is an opportunity to showcase our convention industry. And we think that it's important that we're perceived as hospitable and welcoming to this international recognition that we'll get because of this convention. So we're very pleased to be able to have this come forward and for your consideration and our supportive of it in Minneapolis.
Thank you. Members have any questions or comments?
Madam Chair, Senator Scogin? Was your Senate language the same?
No, Senator Scogin, no. It was a longer time frame. And Mr. Bagnoli can help us here. Excuse me.
Madam Chair, Senator Scogin, initially the language that Senator Scheid had called for 11 days of possible use by the city. It called for no, it didn't allow for it, specifically said a city may not charge a fee. And it went to 4 a.m. and that was roughly about what it did. It also didn't allow for any sort of it didn't include language that allowed cities to take characteristics, I guess, into consideration. In the conversation, just if I might, just sort of how this came up in the House. The issue wasn't really alive until Representative Kahn. She's got the state government finance bill, literally put it in her bill because she thought it was a good idea. It got to the floor. Folks thought, gee, we maybe need to look at this in the Commerce Committee in the House to think about it a little more thoroughly. And they brought it back. They took it out of the omnibus or the state government finance bill, brought the issue back into the House Commerce Committee. At that point, there was a meeting, frankly, with St. Paul, Minneapolis, myself from the Licensed Beverage Association, to discuss sort of what made sense. Frankly, when it was drafted, 11 days seemed, as you can imagine, we would prefer more days than less, and so we thought 11 days, we'd prefer no license fee than a license fee. We'd prefer everybody in the city be able to have the opportunity versus maybe limiting it a little bit. Through that conversation, some limits were put on, and we narrowed it to 5 days, and we allowed for a license fee not to exceed $2,500. I think there's a recognition on the Licensed Beverage Association and the members that this is not a Super Bowl. This is not a Final Four. This is, at the time this event convention occurs, will be the most secure site on the planet. There are incredible logistical issues that both cities and beyond are going to have to face in terms of law enforcement, and that there's a need on the behalf of the cities for some degree of certainty as to what bars, what establishments are going to use this, and that that perhaps a little bit of financial payback or fee is needed to deal with that. And so we agreed to that. We agreed to these, if you'll see there, the limit, the licensing jurisdiction may limit approval to specific geographic zoning or licensing license classification within its jurisdiction to give the city some ability to, frankly, have certainty. I think that's what we understood, that there was a need to know these five bars and these six, you know, these locations are going to have events so that law enforcement can understand where they're going to be. So those were the changes. That's sort of where we got. We're trying to be the establishments all want to participate in this and try to make as much money as, frankly, we all can. But we're trying to do it within the context of the cities. We're not trying to be, frankly, inhospitable to our host cities, so.
Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure which one of you could answer that, but you brought up a point. Were there exceptions made in the Final Four, Super Bowl, any of those events?
It's Mr. Bagnoli.
Madam Chair, Senator Dahl, it's my understanding that for the Super Bowl that there was a change, there was an authorization to allow the city of, I think it was the city of, just the city of Minneapolis at that point to go till two o'clock at that time. And I think it was geographically restricted to the central business district. I'm told that it allowed them to stay open, but they weren't allowed to have alcohol at 2.
It sounds so Minnesotan.
Why are you?
required to serve hot dish. So
it was, Madam Chair, it was a
Mr. Bagnoli.
I was a little bit younger then and was out. We all were, I guess. And it was an extraordinarily snowy night, the night that you likely would have been out. And so I don't know if as many people took advantage of it as. No, I did, but there weren't as many others.
Senator Olson, did you have a question? Is there anybody else? Is there anybody from the city of St. Paul? Mr. Bagnoli, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much for coming over to do that. Hello.
Hello, Madam Chair and members. Wendy Underwood with the City of St. Paul. Thank you very much for the invitation to join you today. And I will just kind of piggyback off of what Mr. Bagnoli shared with you as far as the process over the last couple of weeks on the House side. The St. Paul City Council did pass a resolution opposing the 4 a.m. bar close language as it was moving forward in the House, written by Representative Kahn. So to clarify, Senator Scheid, not the language of your original bill, but of Representative Kahn's language. And their base concerns were around the 10-mile perimeter concept, which has since been removed, and more generally the potential adverse effects on our neighborhoods and the additional strain on law enforcement. I did participate in putting together the compromise language that is before you today. And in that time, Mayor Coleman did not sign the City Council resolution and instead submitted a letter encouraging their support of this language before you. The City Council has not taken an action since their original resolution, but they are in deference to the legislative process. They're aware of the language before you. The mayor is supportive, and we'll see what decision you make from here.
And I would point out to members that it is discretionary. It's permissive language for the city. So, Senator Vandeveer, did you have a question?
I was just wondering if Senator Metzen was going to move the change in the location to Stillwater, but.
Oh, from the convention.
For the convention. I think we're bothering St. Paul.
We talked about that.
Madam Chair,
yes,
if I
Ms.
could, a couple very important principles to the city regarding the convention is that St. Paul will be safe and St. Paul will be open for business.
And I understand the importance of that to the city. Are there any other comments from members or questions? Senator Dahl, I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, just had one other question, and maybe I'm not sure if you could answer this or not. Was there any discussion of the bar closing time or any overtures made to the Republican National Committee in presenting Minneapolis-St. Paul as part of the site?
Ms. Underwood.
Madam Chair, Senator Dahl, thank you for the question. The RNC was aware of Minnesota state laws and the 2 a.m. bar close when the contracts were signed to host the convention. And they do not have a position on this issue, and they did not pursue it.
So is Mr. Mayor here?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Mayor, I received a letter from you and got some information about an event that's going to happen on the 30th of August. Can you tell
right.
us? You're interested, I believe, in having this the timing moved up one day. Is
you
that
are
right?
correct.
Yeah. So, thank Mr.
You,
Mayor.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and committee members for giving me an opportunity to speak. The reason I'm here today is
And be
that,
sure to say your name for the record.
Oh, yes. Scott Mayer, M-A-Y-E-R.
Thank you.
The reason I'm here today is that I'm working with various civic partners in producing an event called Spark 24. The event, as the chair pointed out, is going to begin at 8 p.m. on August 30th and will go 24 hours until 8 p.m. on August 31st. Really, the purpose of the event is twofold. One is to encourage all of the guests that come to Minnesota to come back to Minnesota. And the second is to provide the expected media, which is going to number, we hope, 15,000 to provide them with a message that they can deliver to their readers, their listeners, and viewers nationally and internationally, letting them know what a great community and state we have here. The information that you have indicates, this event's going to be held in multiple venues in downtown Minneapolis. We're inviting everybody. We're focusing on the media and delegates because we want to make sure that they have a great time. It's a matter of customer service, but we also want them to come back along with all of the other visitors that are coming here for the convention. And so far, the committee that I represent has met and is working with a variety of civic partners, ranging from the Minneapolis Convention and Visitors Association, Meet Minneapolis, to the St. Paul CVB, the Downtown Councils, as well as the Republican National Convention Host Committee, which enthusiastically supports this event. We're planning on really focusing on live entertainment. And so we want to immerse all of our guests into the live entertainment experience. And we believe that we've got so much entertainment that we can't contain it all up until 2 a.m. So we want to do an event that lasts for 24 hours, focusing on adults at night and families during the day. And we believe that extending the bar hours until 4 a.m. will give us more of an opportunity to present the Minnesota hospitality.
Mr. Mayor, who's the sponsor of Spark 24?
It's a nonprofit event that is being administered by Hennepin Theater Trust, which is a nonprofit theater organization in downtown Minneapolis. They're the organization that manages the theaters on Hennepin Avenue, the State Orpheum and Pantages.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, question that never occurred to me. We always think about how late we can serve alcohol. What's the earliest? I mean, if you're looking at a 24-hour thing and it ends at 4, when does it start again?
I think we're very careful about that. Mr. Stang, I think it's a morning
Madam
hour.
Chair, 8 a.m., I believe.
It's 8 a.m.?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I believe it's 8 a.m.
So there would be a time frame from 4 a.m. to 8 a.m. Sunday morning that you wouldn't be allowed.
That's right. There's a period where we'll be having some very low-key kinds of things, perhaps at Orchestra Hall, perhaps in the theaters, perhaps in the IDS Center, for example. But no, we will not be serving alcohol during the wee morning hours.
But you feel, Mr. Mayor, it would be important to your event to have to be able to serve until 4 a.m. Sunday morning?
Madam Chair, yes. We believe that in order to really provide the guests with as much of the Minnesota experience as we can, that we would love to have the ability to use as many venues as we can to provide the entertainment that we've got in store.
So, and you said you're working with, I'm looking at the list of civic partners, the mayor's offices, the Meet Minneapolis folks, St. Paul Convention, Visitors Authority, Minnesota Department of Tourism, and the RNC Host Committee are working with you on
Madam Chair,
organizing this event?
Yes, Madam Chair, yes, that's correct. We've contacted all of them and have received no negative implications at all.
And so you... I mean, I think if we were to add a day, if that were to happen along the way, then those entities that are serving would be subject to the same, to a license fee, and it may be the same entities that do that for the convention. But
that's correct, Madam Chair. I do want to point out that it's expected that all of the media is going to be arriving in Minnesota on that Friday, the 29th, because they'll be coming from Denver. And the welcome party for the media, which is going to be held in downtown Minneapolis, is Saturday night, which is why we are planning this event on Saturday night, because we want to really focus on the media and make sure that they provide a message to their constituencies that we've got a great community, we've got a great state. And so it seems to make the most sense to do that in conjunction with the media. And so having the opportunity to have the 4 a.m. extension extend during the time the media is going to have a day off would be something we'd like to do.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, just thinking about this and looking at the dates, on line 4.11, instead of saying 12 p.m. on August 31st, if we simply said 12 a.m. on August 31st, I think we'd accomplish that goal, because by the time it becomes late Saturday night and the hours they're worried about it, we're into the 31st. So you just change the p.m. to a.m., and I think we wouldn't have a problem.
Okay. We're not amending the bill now, but that's thank you for pointing that out. Senator Metzen, did you?
Oh, I just wanted to comment that it seems that the conferences and conventions and stuff that I go to, I think you try to get there the day before, don't you, to get set up and get ready. And so I think it's just normal to, and if the meeting starts at 4 that day, you don't get into town, do you, at 4 o'clock that day? You go the day before, I think. And so I think it makes sense to move it up. If Senator Olson's number makes sense, I'm for that.
Thank you. But did somebody over here? Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Mayor, this event happens in your mind whether or not you get this extension?
Madam Chair, Senator Scogin, yes.
Same day, same times.
Yes, because, Madam Chair, Senator Scogin, we do believe that we need to have it on Saturday night because of the media's ability to participate. Once the convention starts, the media is going to be worn out just from being over at the Excel Center. And so we want to do it when it's most convenient for the media. And so we will do it. Rain or shine, ordinance or not, but we really would, as we said, prefer to have extend the red carpet as much as possible.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you very much for coming
Thank
over.
You.
So, members, I don't know if there's anybody else that wants to speak to this provision. With that, I think we'll conclude the discussion. I don't know, Senator Scogin, if you needed any more feedback from the committee.
Madam Chair, I do have some questions. If we could take a minute and look at sections 1, 2, and 7. These are House provisions that were not in the Senate bill, and so if I could just get a read from this committee, so when we get to conference, we kind of have an idea where we want to go. Section 1 is the pedal pubs. If I could just, I don't know if you want to do a straw poll, if you want to just, if there's any serious reservations
Senator
about
Gerlach,
allowing
did
them
you
to
see
operate.
It on your way in?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thumbs up.
He was the one crying when we pulled him off it.
No. Is Senator Olson, do you want to?
I don't have any specific objections to it, Senator Scogin, but. But unless it's otherwise clear, unless counsel said it was otherwise clear, I think it would be important in here to have clarifying language that it doesn't prohibit local ordinances or the local government's ability to decide how they might want to regulate this.
Through licenses or?
Right, so that we maybe license the number of them or the routes they could use or something like that.
Do you want to say something, Mr.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator, I don't think it's necessary. I don't think anything in here overrides the general police power of the local governments to regulate these. Further, there's authority in the liquor code that specifically with respect to alcoholic beverages gives a city or a licensing jurisdiction authority to impose tighter regulations than what's required under state statute. So I think you're covered there.
So,
okay.
Senator Scogin, I think they're really cool, so.
Thumbs up.
Okay. In Section 2, we don't have any Senate language. And this is, if you would just look at lines 9, 10, and 11 on page 2, this would allow the wholesaler to actually provide samples.
Mr. Sting.
Madam Chair, maybe I could speak to this. This was Senator Tomasoni's bill allowing farm wineries to manufacture and sell distilled spirits at farm wineries. The Senate bill, as we passed it, allows a farm winery to sell it at on sale, off sale, and wholesale. Very broad sales authority for a farm winery. As the bill was considered over in the other body, that became controversial. And the House essentially changed the language to only allow the distilled spirits to be sold, I believe, at wholesale and through our current three-tier system, so much restricted. So that's kind of what this does, is my understanding. I also think it's an issue of continuing controversy over there, and I'm not positive this is the way it's going to look
when you see it again,
okay,
when it comes back. So
that's why.
Yeah.
That's why.
Madam Chair.
Are we? Go ahead.
Senator Scogin.
Senator Olson.
My objection to this provision is just simply from a legal or maybe I'd say English standpoint is I don't think, looking at line 210 and 211, a farm winery may provide samples of distilled spirits in the same manner as they are able for farm wines. That last part of that sentence sounds to me like a poorly written sentence, and so I would encourage you, Senator Scogin, if you're going to do something with this to make the intent clearer than that sentence seems to make it.
Good advice, Senator Olson. I see that. So. And then was there something else?
The other one that doesn't have Senate language would be Section 7.
The report?
Which is a report that we did not hear, I guess, in this committee. And if anyone has a real anxiety about the reporting process, then I should know that.
Mr. Sting.
Madam Chair, that's related to the issue I just brought up about the controversy over these micro distilleries. And, you know, we're not looking to do more studies over the summertime in our office. so if you wanted to reject this, I personally would not be sad.
But it sounds like one of the more interesting studies.
But we're also, you know, we're also happy to do it if you need it to get a bill passed. So.
Okay. Senator Prettner-Solin.
Madam Chair, I don't think I've ever encountered language like this before that says, and shall not make recommendations. Normally, we have to say, and shall make recommendations. Why would we reject any recommendations?
Interesting point, Senator Prettner-Solin. Yes, Mr. Stang.
Madam Chair, Senator Solin, part of this is nonpartisan staff don't want to get in the position, especially in these kind of discussions when you have, you know, economic interest on both sides with points of view, to be seen as advocating really one side or the other in these debates. It's not a good position for us to be in. And generally in liquor studies, at least, we've tried to kind of maintain a sense of neutrality there, and just the reports more or less kind of lay out options and, you know, what other states' laws look like, rather than us saying, you know, we should sell these at brew pubs, or we should sell this at, not sell them at all, or wholesales have to be through the current three-tier system. We try to avoid that if we possibly can.
So, Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Stang, isn't it true that any senator could make a request of Senate counsel and say, hey, I'd like you to produce a report for me that shall review issues surrounding, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? We don't need to put it in statute. Anybody can make that request.
Mr. Stang is nodding.
Madam Chair,
yes.
That's absolutely true. I think this is bad policy to put this kind of thing in a statute. I've never liked it. Any member can ask me to do this at any time. I'd be happy to do it. Sometimes, I guess, you know, in terms of getting bills passed, people like to see stuff like this in writing in the statute, and it just sometimes it helps deals get made, I guess. But I don't like it.
Senator Prettner-Solin.
Madam Chair, however, on other committees I've sat, mm-hmm, I've been told by the department they only accept one or two studies a year that they will fund. And so if we don't put it into law, then they're likely to get a fiscal note for them.
Well, you're talking about agencies, Senator Prettner-Solin. This is about legislative staff who operate differently.
Well, Madam Chair, that
yes, Senator Scogin.
For me, that then the question becomes, if we direct you to do that, Mr. Stang, would you go to agencies to get that done, or would you do it independently? Or
Madam Chair, Senator Scogin, as I read this language, we do this in-house, and, you know, we may avail ourselves of expertise of the agencies to put it together. But, you know, it's something we could handle.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Gerlach.
I do. I think this is really poor policy to put this in here, because if any member was, I mean, we have a working relationship with Senate Counsel and House Research where we can say, well, this is what we're looking at, then they can come back and say, well, more specifically, what are you looking for? And it's a kind of a give and a take, and you work out what exactly you're doing. But if this is in law, then, well, it doesn't matter what you do. I mean, this is what it says. This is much what you must pursue. This is what you must research, and there's no give and take. It is terrible policy to put in statute directing our own staff on what to do. So I would, my strong advice would be to argue against this and just drop this. It's unnecessary.
I appreciate that advice too, Senator Scogin. I think that's good.
And
Senator Scogin.
Madam Chair and members, just I think Senator Scheid mentioned it in her opening remarks about the Thomas-Oney provision that you don't see in the House language, and still talking with Senator Thomas-Oney and Representative Sertich and myself about why or why that may not be in. And it was for a establishment up in or near Cherry, and we're trying to decide if we're a referee in a other dispute or if we're actually being handed a legitimate request. So we'll see how that plays out when we get to the conference committee.
Okay, members, and I think, Senator Scogin, you feel comfortable or more comfortable with the bill you may be dealing with here.
I think so.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Then for everyone here, I'd like to move then just briefly, maybe 5 or 10 minutes at the most, talk about the Department of Commerce technical bill that I carried, or and still am, and what is different, and I suppose I left my folder. Sure I did. That's all right. I think I know what's in it. I don't know, Mr. Gross, from the department, are you willing to come up and just talk to us briefly about a couple of things they've done in the House? And
do you want to hang out this one, which has the language or not?
Yeah, it might be helpful for members to see the language. This is a little unusual, but since we were having this meeting and there are some pieces of the House bill that did not get brought up during the Senate discussion of the bill, and I am considering that I might offer an amendment on the Senate floor, and I don't really I'm certainly not changing the direction of the bill. It would just be expanding it in a couple of areas, and I think that it's pretty non-controversial, but I wanted the committee members to at least have heard it so that if I do this, I can say to the Senate body that the committee saw this and it's not alarming, or maybe it will be, but I don't think so. And Mr. Gross, talk to me. This is everything in one, I think, Mr. Gross. So you don't have to comment on the first part. I'll mention the first part, and we'll come back to the first part. We'll come back to Section 1, okay? That has to do with auto dealers. So we'll get down to line 115. I think that's probably... And I think the department would prefer this language, and it's just a choice of language, I think. Is Mr. Gross, welcome.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Gross. I'm the Director of Healthcare Policy for the Department of Commerce. Basically, what this amendment pertains to is some changes in the Senate bill that Commerce needs, and then most of it is changes or items that were added in the House bill that we're just adding to the Senate bill. Basically, if you look at line 1.17, this is electronic enrollment into a Medicare supplement policy. This came from the industry, and this is something that, as you may know, we're trying to encourage more and more people to do everything electronically, and this is an opportunity for some people. If they wanted to enroll in a Medicare supplement electronically, they can certainly do that.
And it's only for MedSup plans, am I right?
Chairman, that is correct. If you look in the actual bill that we do have, there is some talk and conversation about electronic enrollment into a long-term nursing care policy, too.
Okay. Mr. Gross, on line 115, I think that has to do with something the department wanted also. Am I right? The related office visits is the language we have in the Senate. I think that was in one of the memos. Is that ringing a bell?
Where's Daddy's doctor?
Madam Chairman, thank you for bringing that to my attention. This is on the cancer screening. We were trying to modify the law to make sure that when a person went in, let's say, for a PSA test or a pap smear or whatever, that the office visit was paid for, too. And this is clarifying language to say that the insurer will pay for the office or the facilities visit, too.
Okay. So not just the office visit, but the going into the lab for the blood test or whatever. Is that...
Yes, Madam Chairman.
Okay. Then...
And then if you go down to the bottom of the page there, we're talking about the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association's Board of Directors. And as I previously mentioned, we've had some difficulty for the five public members trying to make sure we come up with five public members. And it does require the two people live out of the metropolitan area. One has to be an insurance agent. Two must have received coverage through a small employer, et cetera. And what we sometimes wind up having to do is find one person that meets two or three of these criteria. So what we're doing here is changing the language just a tad to simply say that the person that has insurance with a small employer, we're also going to be looking at somebody that might have an individual policy. And that's what we're trying to accomplish down there at the bottom of the page. It's just we're saying it could be either somebody through a small employer or somebody that has purchased individual health coverage.
Okay. And then on the back, the merger I know has to do, I don't know if that's a department. I think it's really, it's technical and yet it isn't, but the JUA, the Joint Underwriting Association, apparently is set up, it covers two areas of, two types of insurance, two groups, and we're, it's essentially the same people, I think, that are on that board, and we're just, and I'll let you go further with it.
Madam Chair, Manny Munson-Regala, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Commerce. It's our understanding that the board of directors for both JAAs are, in fact, the same individuals on both boards. Mr. Franson came to us with this proposal. I don't see him here, but it's our understanding that he's talked to the respective boards, and they think that for administrative purposes, this makes sense to combine the two entities.
Okay, so that's what that is. And then the last part, I think, has to do with realtors. It's Chapter 82, brokers, real estate brokers. And I don't know if you have seen that. It's apparently in the House bill. And it wouldn't be something that probably had come to your attention until... Hello, Mr. Straczynski.
Well, good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Bill Straczynski, and I represent Breezy Point Resorts. This section is a combination of efforts. This limited broker license is an activity that I worked out with the Department of Commerce, Bonnie Polta, who handles these licensing divisions. What we're simply doing is this involves timeshare salespeople. In order for a timeshare salesperson to sell under a limited broker's license, a salesperson, limited broker, currently they have to be on the board of directors of the timeshare development. Well, these are typically salespeople, and this is it's very problematic, has been for years with respect to liability, errors insurance, director's insurance, those kinds of things for Breezy Point Resort. And probably one of the, there's probably just a couple timeshare activities going on in Minnesota anymore. So this clarifies all of that. They can work without being a member of their board of directors, but they have to be supervised, and they have to provide information to the Department of Commerce, as you do with other kinds of brokers and licensees. So this really is clarifying language, makes it simpler for us to operate at Breezy Point Resort with people who are salespeople on staff, employees, and the department's got the regulatory oversight that they need to monitor this activity. It's just cleans it up a lot for both of us.
That's helpful to know. Mr. Munson-Regala, do you have any... reaction to that, or
no? We're fine with it.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam
Chair. Thank you,
the committee. Thank you,
Mr. Straczynski. And I don't know if you wanted to comment on Section One or not. And I think Ms. Schlander is here. And this is back on page one, up at the top, cash sale price.
Madam Chair, I'm Bill Straczynski.
Still.
I represent the Minnesota Auto Dealers Association along with Alyssa, but full disclosure, I also own a Chevrolet dealership. We see the USA in your Chevrolet. That's me. I do own one, and I'm happy to talk about this provision.
Okay. Ms. Schlander, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Alyssa Schlander. I represent the Minnesota Auto Dealers Association. We brought this provision, a small provision. Basically, what we're doing here is there's a provision in statute that allows dealers to recoup some of their costs for doing the legal paperwork in the state's tax collection. And from time to time, we need to come back to the state legislature and ask for an increase in that cap. Minnesota is one of only 13 states that that cap this particular fee on auto dealers.
You say, Ms. Schlander, how many?
13 states
okay.
Provide a limitation on the amount that dealers may charge for this service. And of those 13 states, the average cap is $75, and that's what we're asking for in this provision. It was very non-controversial in the House. And part of our reasoning for doing this is that there have been so many additional requirements imposed on the dealership business in the last several years. We are required to make about 40 disclosures on about 20 different forms. Not 20 new forms, but over the course of the entire vehicle transaction. Additional provisions that we just passed in the transportation omnibus bill earlier this session will require new forms, new tax collections, new employee training, new computer software, and then there have been other consumer protection measures that have been passed in the last couple of legislatures that have resulted in quite a few cost increases for our dealers. So that's it in a nutshell.
Madam Chair, I can attest.
Yes, Mr. Straczynski.
I can just attest to you, the privacy requirement, whatever, meeting with attorneys and fees to get our privacy stuff in line alone, and disclosure forms, it cost my dealership about $15,000, not a small dealership up in Hinckley, Minnesota. But, I mean, it's expensive to do these kinds of things, and we're not objecting to it. This is a modest increase. I would appreciate the committee's support for this particular provision. I think some states actually can charge $700. We're not asking for anything like that.
Are you serious?
Madam Chair, in states where there is no cap, there's no restriction on the fee, I hear this quite a bit from dealers who operate in other states, that other states' dealers are charging several hundred dollars, and Mr. Straczynski is right there. We've heard that $700 seems to be the $500, you know, that's pretty excessive. And I know that the question has come up about why do we even have a cap, and I think that the way that this provision is written sort of provides some balance between allowing us to cover our costs but not allowing things to get too out of hand with respect to several hundred dollar fees for this type of thing.
And you think the cost, there is this cost, or maybe you think it's even more to you?
Madam Chair, I can attest
to Mr. Straczynski.
To process the paperwork and the disclosures when it relates to warranties and everything else and sales tax collections, all of that, all the add-ons that people get, it's much more expensive than $75. I just told Alyssa, I just last night had dinner with my general manager, and we approved a new software system because it deals with document fees and deals with all the other disclosures we have to have, and that's going to cost me $1,500 more per month for the new computerized system. But it's the cost of doing business, so we respectfully request the legislature's help in adjusting this fee just a little bit.
Members have any thoughts on this? Or
Madam Chair, I just want to say that I think this is a reasonable small boost for all the extra add-ons that they have to do, and I would guess that this doesn't even cover about half of your costs if you analyzed it out. And I think it's been a good 5 years, maybe longer, since this has even been touched. So I think it's in line to give them a little catch-up and get paid just a little more for the activity that's probably cost them 2.5, 3, 4 times this. So I'm in favor of it, obviously.
Members have any other comments? It's my bill.
Or do you like it?
Don't surprise. Well, this whole bill is. No surprises on the floor, right?
Not for me, unless you.
No, no. Senator Gerlach.
I think that they're far too modest. I think we should explore removing the cap. That's my free market libertarian perspective.
Yeah, well, Senator Gerlach, I'd appreciate it if you'd say that on the floor. that would probably help me get over this, even
Madam
though
Chair,
I
members.
Tend to agree with him.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for being here. Members, thank you for your input on these bills, particularly the liquor bill. And I don't think we'll be having any more meetings. Thank you to staff, because I know it wasn't everybody's favorite thing to have a committee meeting. Other than Senator Metzen, who loved it. Thank you. And with that, the meeting's adjourned. Senator Vander.